This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The WXXI Elections Hub at WXXINews.org has not only a catalog of these conversations, but a lot more elections coverage, and I hope that you are consulting it before you vote. Early voting starts October 26th here. It's coming up, and my next guest is Orlando Rivera, who is the Republican running in New York State Assembly District number 136. That covers Brighton, Irondequoit, many city neighborhoods like Shalott, Maplewood, North and Lyceum, Browncroft, North Winton neighborhoods. It's nice to have you back here. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Evan. I appreciate it.
We always let our guests who are running for office kind of introduce or reintroduce themselves. So why don't you tell listeners a little bit about yourself and why you decided that this is a seat that you'd like to run for?
Right. So I grew up in the city of Rochester, born and raised, of course. I'm a father of four. I have two decades of service to my community, and whether that was as a Rotarian, a Knight of Columbus, civil service commissioner with the city, or other various roles I've held, I believe this is the next step in leadership for me, and I want to be able to help people protect and strengthen their families.
Tell me a little bit about an animating concern of yours, which is crime and public safety. So that's something that you've talked a lot about with voters, and I know you wanted to take some time with that. So when you think about where things are with public safety, with crime, we can point to numbers saying that year to year, crime is down a bit in New York State, that it's closer to 2019 pre-pandemic levels. I know that you don't view that as acceptable in any way where we are with it. So tell me about how you see crime and public safety generally first, and then we'll talk about what you want to see change.
Yeah, for sure. So just let me say this first. So my wife was the victim of a violent home invasion when she was in high school. And she had people come into the house armed with guns and held her father at gunpoint, and she witnessed that. She told me that she is more afraid now than she was decades ago when that happened, which is of course very surprising. You know, crime in our city has affected businesses, affected our neighborhoods, and I'm looking to hopefully make a change to that environment.
So, why do you think she is more fearful now? Do you think that that is based on perception or based on reality?
It's based on reality. So where I live in the Maplewood neighborhood, and in that particular section is where a lot of the incidents, unfortunately, are taking place. So just to give you an example, I'm sure you heard about the car chase that went throughout the city the other day. It actually came right down our street and came right past our house, and we happened to catch the footage on a camera. So had my kids been outside and been playing, they would have been subject to that. And I'll give you another incident. So my son was playing baseball with a Hispanic Youth Baseball League. They're out at the David Gantt Center, and one of the, we'll say the Kia boys were out, stole a car, took it around Portland Avenue. They end up flipping the car, and it's right in front of all these kids, coaches, and parents. The kids get out of the car. The kids are witnessing all this. They get out of the car. They walk away like nothing happened. And when one of the parents tried to get up to chastise them about what happened, they pointed to their waistband like, no, I don't think you want to try that. And my son says to me, he's 10 years old, he says, Dad, why are these people allowed to do this? And children are dumb. I give them a ton of credit because they're smarter than we know. And he understands that, you know, what was done was wrong. But what do I say to a 10-year-old when those types of things happen? It's very difficult.
All right. So take me through then what has to change.
I think we need to start holding people responsible for their actions. And so I would probably say that you and I are probably around the same age. And when we were younger, our parents held us to a certain standard. You know, it was if you, you know, did something at school that you weren't supposed to do, you got a call, your parent got a call from the principal, you're in the principal's office, your parent comes in, there was a consequence for that. you know, in these days, it seems like it's a revolving door where people are allowed to commit a crime and then they're right back at it again. And I think we need to reevaluate the current, like, the current policy, because it's just not working. And this policy was, of course, set up to help, you know, individuals, and so that they weren't sitting in jail. And it's hurting the very neighborhoods and the people it was actually intended to help, in my opinion.
I think you're talking about bail reform.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. I want to talk about car thefts specifically. Mm-hmm. And then some other issues related to safety. But with bail reform,
yep.
You think that it has had deleterious effects. It has backfired, essentially.
Yes.
Okay. So if you're elected to office in the New York State Assembly, you're going to vote to do what?
I think we need to take a look at the reforms and start from scratch, because I get it and I understand, but I do also get that a lot of the laws that are enacted throughout the state are based on things that are happening downstate. And our area is different than New York City, is different than the northern part of New York. And we need to figure out what works best, but we also need to figure out how to hold people accountable for their actions. And whether that's jail time, whether that's fines, we need to figure that out.
When it comes to the reasons that bail reform happened,
mm-hmm.
how would you describe what you think the intentions were? I mean, I know this conversation gets very heated,
yes.
but do you think that the people who passed it had good intentions and were trying to solve legitimate problems?
I do. I think we can all agree that it was well-intended. But unfortunately, when you empower somebody to do something, which is what I think has happened here, and people see, well, there's no consequences for my actions, so I'm going to continue to do what I'm doing, and there's nothing they can do about it. So it essentially becomes a recruitment tool for folks to commit crimes.
When it comes to car theft specifically,
mm-hmm.
We heard from some members, current members of the New York State Assembly, who are supportive of Monroe County's JEDS program. That's the Juvenile Diversion Program that was instituted last year when we saw the dramatic, dramatic increase with both Kia and Hyundai thefts, typically.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's others. But I think everybody remembers last year when the spike happened. So the JEDS program, the way I would describe it is, I think everyone involved who has been on this program said they recognized things were not working. Too often, some, you know, you might be 15 years old, 14 years old, steal a car, and you get an appearance ticket, and it's days or weeks away. And that wasn't good enough either. You needed immediate intervention. You needed to try to figure out what is causing this 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old to steal a car. And you have to get individual officers within the system working directly with often kids. They've now pointed to JEDS, and they've given me two stats recently. And again, this is the data from the county and from the state. So I haven't seen it myself, but this is what they report. The number one in the city of Rochester, September 24 to September 2023, year to year, car thefts were down 61%. And the recidivism rate for people who participate in the JEDS program is somewhere in the single digits. Do you feel like we are seeing models now that have identified how to make this change effectively?
I don't think so personally, because the consequences for it are slim to none. An appearance ticket is not enough of a deterrent to keep a young person from going out and doing this when someone's recruited them to continue this. And I think we need to look a little bit deeper into it to kind of figure out what needs to be done next steps as far as trying to stop it.
Do you feel like the JEDS approach is, for lack of a better term, too soft?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. How do you feel about, you know, essentially incarcerating teenagers or even preteens for these kind of crimes?
In the instances where I believe it's warranted, yes. And we're talking about people that have repeat offenders, like the 17-year-old, unfortunately, that ended up crashing the car that killed Mr. Chase. Individuals that are a danger to the public, should be the ones that we really take a look at, you know, and potentially enact a dangerousness standard.
So you want more judicial discretion?
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, everyone from the governor to current members of the assembly who voted for recent bail reforms would say that the 2022 changes to bail reform were designed to give judges more discretion. RIT has been working on, and let me see here, this is RIT's, the Center for Public Safety Initiatives at RIT. They write, quote, "The bail reform statute has already been amended twice. The first change expanded the cases eligible for bail and expanded the factors that judges can consider when deciding bail, giving judges significant additional discretion from the original 2019 statute. The original justification offered for amending or rolling back bail reform was rising gun violence rates." And this, again, this is RIT's Center for Public Safety Initiatives. They say, "We are seeing gun violence in 2023 returning to pre-bail reform and pre-pandemic levels. And in the jurisdiction of urban centers outside of New York City in New York State, in the first 2 months of the year, shooting incidents involving injury were down 37% from the same time a year ago." So the Center for Public Safety Initiatives is trying to really analyze the data and say, where has it gone? Where are we now? What is working? What they're saying is judges do have a little bit more discretion now than they did with the original bail reform, and that has enabled some positive change in the direction here. Does not sound to me like you think that is sufficient. Can you describe your feelings about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I believe that judges, whether they have this discretion or not, are not using it to the best of their ability. And I think that may stem from a few different things. Maybe the law is they're not able to interpret those changes, and more training needs to happen. And if that's the case, these are all folks that have gone to law school and understand, you know, how to interpret law for the most part as it's written. So if it's written too complicated for these folks, that's an issue. And I think they need to go back and take a look at it and, again, go through and say, okay, what kind of training is needed here in order to help us move this forward in an equitable manner for everyone.
We're talking to Orlando Rivera, by the way. Orlando is running for New York State Assembly in District Number 136. Another justification that the advocates for bail reform consistently brought up on this program 5 years ago was that their concern is that when you have total judicial discretion, you end up with judges saying, well, this person is accused of committing this crime. And, you know, obviously we haven't had a trial yet. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to have this person held because of a dangerousness standard. And what they would say is it would be kids who look like yours who would be targeted even without realizing it, the judges might be more likely to think that black and brown men especially are more dangerous than the average person, and that bias could lead to more incarceration, being held pretrial more, people are losing jobs, transportation, and things spiral. Are you concerned at all about that?
I would say it's a valid concern. I can't say that, you know, because I can't tell somebody else how they feel. So I can completely understand that be a concern from another end of it. For me personally, it's not a concern for me, but I can understand why it would be a concern for someone else.
So tell me if I'm summing this up correctly. Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like you see public safety as paramount. That if we don't have it at the level that you think we should have it, we can't have the society that you want us to have. And that right now you don't think that we have enough public safety. And that while it is possible that there could be bias in judicial proceedings against typically black and brown young men, it is not enough of a concern for you to say, hey, let's take more discretion away from judges. Let's take a dangerous standard away from judges. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think quality of life matters, and also the proper training when it comes to implicit bias, you know, may be necessary as well to alleviate those concerns.
So when we hold or incarcerate people, and sometimes teenagers for crimes like the ones you've described. If we're going to be locking more people up, do you think anything should be done to try to help rehabilitate them? Because eventually, most will not be incarcerated at some point. So what happens then?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we do need to try and rehabilitate, you know, the people that have gone through, you know, that judicial process and, you know, and are accused of, you know, multiple crimes and that whole long list. As someone who grew up without a father in their life and had other people step up to, you know, help mentor me, I believe that's important. Because that way you don't go off track again. So definitely I would advocate for, you know, some sort of mentorship program to show these kids a step-by-step process to understand, you know, how you are a productive member of your community and society.
Talking to Orlando Rivera, a few more minutes with the candidate for District number 136 of the New York State Assembly, the Republican on the ballot in this particular race. You mentioned you live in Maplewood.
Yes.
So you've heard the ATVs and the motorbikes.
I have.
And this has been a multi-years now long question on what can and should be done about that. I live in Shalott, just up the road from you. We probably hear the same exact people on the roads. How do you feel about where things stand with that? Do you want to see more intervention there? What do you think?
Yeah, I would love to see more intervention there because, again, it becomes about safety. And we have young people that are walking, biking, and, you know, you just want to be, you want to make sure that everybody's safe. Traffic safety to me has become a huge issue because I see people running red lights all the time and, you know, just dangerous behavior. And I'd love to see the ability to help curtail that just to keep our citizens safe.
Do you think police are too limited?
I do. I do think they're not able to do their jobs the way they should be able to. And that's to protect their duties, to protect the citizens. And that's the government's responsibility to help. So we need to enable them to do that.
I feel like lately Lake Avenue has been particularly extra, just extra. Driving home has been—it's been a little wild lately, but you know maybe that's true in a lot of different places. We've talked a lot about public safety. I want to give you some space if you want to tell listeners about any other issues that are top priorities for you as you run for New York State Assembly.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was raised by a single mother, and she stretched a dollar with three children, and now it's become even more difficult. I believe the grocery bill at Wegmans or Tops or wherever you shop has become less and less palatable. So one of the things that I would like to do is to help people to earn a decent wage where they can help raise and grow their families. And I have extensive experience in training and workforce development. And I would, through relationships with companies, go through work experience programs in order to get people the training they need to earn a decent wage and make it beneficial for both so that folks can, you know, better their lives and have better quality of life overall.
Are you in the, many of your Republican colleagues feel like New York State is overtaxed and have ideas on how to change that? Where are you on that?
So I do think we are overtaxed, but I would probably attack it from a different angle. So I'm a realtor, and I believe that home ownership is the way to grow generational wealth, and I think we need to give more people access to that, and that'll help create more of a shared tax burden. And I think that's the important piece that we're missing. We need to connect that in our communities to stress the importance of owning your own place so that you have skin in the game, so to speak.
But how do we get there?
I believe education and also advocacy and effort. And I think we need to figure out what programs are available to people and get them set up so that they can be successful. Because anyone can become a homeowner. It's about what you really, really want to do, what you want out of life.
In our last half hour, we talked to Marcus C. Williams, who is also running for New York State Assembly. In terms of education, he said that the budget for the Rochester City School District is too high for the results that we see. And he doesn't believe poverty is an excuse. And he said if he's elected, he's not sure exactly what the number is, but he wants to see budget cuts for RCSD. Would you vote for budget cuts for RCSD if you're elected to go to Albany?
So I'm a big proponent of the charter schools, and I believe they're doing a great job with our young men and women. And I think they need the money because they have a model that works and it's proven to work. I also believe in our educators, and I wouldn't necessarily look to completely cut the budgets because I think we need teachers. We need good teachers because we do have great educators within our system. I've visited a lot of the schools, and the kids are doing, in my opinion, as well as, you know, they're able to do. You can't control the environments in their homes, but when you have them, you do the best you can. So I understand that, and I'm not necessarily looking to make cuts there, but I'm also looking at improving a model that seemingly works, and that's the charter.
So last 50 seconds or so, what do you think is happening in charter schools that's not happening in the rest of the district that's more effective?
Their formula of really honing in on, especially with young men, and I think that's important. They give them guidance. They give them people in their lives that they can come to and that trust them. I think that confidence and trust allows those kids to really let their guard down and understand that this person has my best interest at heart. And I can trust them and move forward. And I think we need to encourage kids to learn because sometimes kids aspire to the levels of education in life that their parents did. So if their parents didn't go beyond high school, maybe they don't get the connection there. So I think that if someone's successful and then they view them that way and they trust them, they will move forward.
Is there an online resource you want to direct people to find more about you?
If you go to my Facebook page, Orlando Rivera for State Assembly, you can find out more.
Orlando Rivera is the candidate in District number 136, Brighton, Irondequoit, much of the city of Rochester. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And we've got more connections coming up in just a moment.